hat. It was a hot day, but the heat was dry, and her hat shielded her from the sun. No one stopped her, and she walked around for a little while, through orchards and past vineyards and gardens, and then walked back toward the chateau. She could easily imagine her mother walking there with Umberto, enjoying the view of the bay. It was a beautiful, peaceful place, and apparently very well kept. She saw two gardeners in the distance, but they never approached. She was halfway across the courtyard on her way back to her car, when a silver Lamborghini roared into the courtyard with the top down, driven by a man with white hair. He almost looked like Umberto for a moment, and Valerie was startled and embarrassed when he looked at her and frowned. He got out of the car quickly and came toward her with a questioning look.
Si, senora, cosa sta cercando?
She knew he was asking what she was looking for, and she would have felt stupid answering, my mother, and he would have thought she was crazy. He probably did anyway. She didn't feel properly dressed to be trespassing, in sandals and jeans and her battered old Borsellino straw hat.
Scusi, she said, feeling flustered as she apologized to him. C'è casa bellissima, she said, pointing at the house and telling him how beautiful it was.
È una proprietà privata, he reminded her.
It was private property, and she decided to shoot for the moon, at the risk of seeming even more foolish or intrusive.
Mia mamma era in questa casa molti anni fa, she said,
feeling lame, telling him her mother had been in the house many years before, which was the best she could do in her rusty Italian.
La Contessa di San Pignelli, she said, groping for an excuse for her intrusion. Sono la sua figlia.
He frowned then as he looked at her. She had told him she was Marguerite's daughter.
Davvero? For real, it is true?
He said, switching to English, which was easier for her, if not for him. He looked intrigued.
My son came to see the house some months ago. I believe you met him, Philip Lawton. He sent you some photographs of my mother and stepfather, the Count and Countess. He gave me your card, Signore Salvatore,
she said shyly, and he looked thunderstruck.
He did not tell me they are his grandparents.
It's a long story, but he didn't know then.
And you are the beautiful Countess's daughter. The photographs are in the house.
He waved vaguely at the Castello, fascinated by her now, as Valerie smiled back at him, grateful that he had remembered Philip and not told her to leave.
I'm terribly sorry to intrude on you like this, she apologized, still feeling flustered and rude. I came to Naples to see where my mother lived with the Count. It's silly, I know. She's dead now, and I wanted to come to Italy to see her home.
She didn't explain that she'd never known her in her entire life, and had only just discovered that Marguerite was her mother. It was too convoluted to explain in either language.
Do you wish to see the house?
He asked politely, and she couldn't stop herself from nodding. She was desperate to. It was why she had come, and the main reason for her trip. He took her on a more extensive tour than he had given Philip. He showed her the Count and Countess's bedroom, where he slept now, their private suite with a beautiful library of antique books, and the little study where Umberto had worked at whatever he did, which Valerie didn't know or want to ask. There was a lovely boudoir and dressing room that had been her mother's that was empty now, with antique wallpaper that had been hand-painted and looked like something from Venice in the 17th century, and probably was. There were sitting rooms and spare bedrooms that Saverio had turned into guest rooms, majestic chandeliers lit with candles, a noble dining room with a long table and tapestries and graceful chairs, the living room he used to entertain, and a big homey kitchen, also with the view of the bay. The house was large and distinguished, but not too large to be comfortable and inviting. She wished she could close her eyes and imagine her mother there. And she saw one of the photographs Philip had sent him on a grand piano in a silver frame in a place of honor. And as Philip had, she noticed the impressive contemporary art the new owner had successfully mingled with the antiques, which had married well. He had either a good decorator or great taste. The tour ended in the kitchen, where he offered her a glass of wine, and she hesitated. She didn't want to overstay or exploit his kindness unduly.
I'm so sorry to disturb you,
she said, looking uncomfortable, and he smiled.
I know how it is with families. My mother died when I was a young boy. I always want to know about her, like you, perhaps?
He asked as he poured the chilled white wine into a glass and handed it to her, and then one for himself. He walked her out to a terrace where they sat down and could view the perfectly manicured gardens, which he had restored.
A mother is very special, he said, and took a sip of the cool wine. I like your son very much when I meet him. He is a good man.
She smiled at the compliment for Philip.
Thank you. I think so, too. Do you have children?
She asked him, and he smiled easily and held up two fingers.
Two. Un ragazzo a Roma.
A boy in Rome, she understood.
E la mia figlia a Firenze. My daughter work with me in my gallery. My son is the director of my gallery in Rome.
Art,
he said, pointing at the paintings inside the house.
Your son sells art for Christie's,
he said, remembering.
E gioielli.
Jewels.
Yes, I only have one son.
She held up one finger with a smile.
And I'm an artist.
She pantomimed painting, and he looked impressed.
Brava!
He complimented her, and they sat looking at the view for a moment, as she thought about her mother again. She could almost feel her here, where she had lived for a long time, and hopefully been happy. It was a warm, inviting place, and he explained to Valerie that he loved it and touched his heart, as he had with Philip.
You go to Capri now, or Amalfi, Sorrento, Positano, on holiday?
No,
she said, shaking her head.
Firenze.
Florence. She hadn't wanted to go to a beach resort alone, and she knew that Capri was overrun with tourists at that time of year, and it hadn't appealed to her. The cities with their art treasures did. She'd been debating about going to Venice, too. There was more to see there than in Positano or Capri, and museums and galleries she loved to visit.
Me too, he said. I go back to Firenze in a few days to work. I am here to rest, he said,
but wasn't convincing. He had driven in at full speed in the Lamborghini, which didn't seem restful to her.
I come here one time, two time in a month, to relax.
That made sense to her.
Otherwise, Firenze, Roma, Londra, Parigi, business.
She nodded her understanding of the cities where he worked, and they sat peacefully for a while, and then she stood up, having imposed on him for long enough.
Please call me when you come to Firenze. Visit my gallery and meet my daughter,
he said hospitably.
You have lunch with us.
I'd like that very much, she said, as he walked her back to where her driver was waiting with the car.
A man in a Mercedes drove into the courtyard then, and Saverio waved at him, as though he'd been expecting him.
I'm sorry I stayed so long. Thank you for the tour of the house.
She looked moved, and he smiled warmly at her.
Not at all. It was a pleasure and an honor.
He bent to kiss her hand, and she felt like someone very important when he did, even the Pope. She wasn't used to the European traditions that were symbols of her gender and rank.
Mille grazie, she said,
as the other man walked up to them and spoke rapidly to Saverio in Italian, and her host introduced them.
Valerie Lawton,
she supplied.
Signora Lawton, presto, Firenze,
he said, and left her then, and walked into the house with his guest, talking animatedly. He couldn't have been nicer, just as Philip had said. And yet again, with an uninvited guest. It had been a perfect visit for her, and she had seen enough. She had visited her mother's bedroom, her dressing room, where they ate, their living room and gardens. And it was Saverio's house now, not theirs. She was faintly embarrassed at what she'd done, barging in on him, but she was glad she had come to Naples nonetheless. But she knew she didn't need to come back again. She had seen it, and walked through her mother's home. She spoke to the concierge at the hotel that night and made arrangements to go back to Rome the next day. She wanted to spend a few more days there, and then she would go to Florence as she had planned. She didn't know if she'd have the courage to call the owner of the chateau when she was in Florence. She didn't want to bother him at work this time. Maybe she'd just wander into his gallery out of curiosity. But her pilgrimage was complete now. The rest of her trip would be just for pleasure, and Marguerite Pearson de Saint-Pignelli could rest in peace.
Chapter 23. Valerie's second stay in Rome, after returning from Naples, was even more interesting than the first. She looked up several galleries and museums she had wanted to visit, went to the catacombs, which she'd always wanted to do, and discovered a myriad of small churches tucked away in narrow side streets, and she began to know her way around the city on foot. She loved being there, even alone, and she told Philip all about it when he called her. They agreed on what a nice man Saverio was, and she told him about her visit to his home and how welcoming he had been.
"He's a great guy. Our family seems to keep dropping in on him, and he's a good sport about it."
"I saw the photo you sent him of my mother. He had it framed on the piano, which was sweet."
"I think he has a crush on her,"
Philip commented easily, and his mother laughed at the irreverence.
"So where are you going now?"
he asked her.
"Florence. I'll figure the rest out after that."
She had no set reservations after Florence, and had wanted to play it by ear. And there was so much art she never tired of in Florence that she didn't want to rush to leave. She was thinking of renting a car to drive through Tuscany, which she didn't tell Philip, or he'd worry.
"How's Jane?"
Valerie asked him.
"Busy. She's taking the bar exam in 3 weeks. I probably won't get 5 words out of her till then. She's staying at her place for a few days so I don't distract her."
She had told him he was like a kid, trying to kiss and cuddle her all the time, and she had to work. So he was banished, but he had plenty to do to keep busy at work. Valerie called Winnie that night, too, as she had promised. She was fine, despite her allergies. She was in a bridge tournament, which kept her happy. Valerie told her she had been to Naples and seen the house, met its owner, and was back in Rome exploring the city.
"Better you than I. It's probably boiling hot there," Winnie said plaintively.
"It's hot, but I love it."
Valerie sounded happy and relaxed. And the next day, Valerie decided not to fly to Florence, but drive there instead. She rented a Mercedes, which would be solid on the road, and she would be safe. She had the doorman load her bags in the trunk, and she took the highway after she left Rome, and stayed on it until Perugia, where she left the highway and drove past Lago Trasimeno. 4 hours after she left Rome, she reached Florence and found her way to the Four Seasons Hotel Firenze, using the GPS. She felt supremely competent as she got there, and she'd had a great day on the road, and had stopped in Perugia for lunch. She left the car at the hotel, checked into her room, and then walked through the Piazza della Signoria and bought a gelato. It was a gorgeous hot afternoon, and she couldn't wait to go to the Uffizi the next day. It was her favorite museum in Europe, and she and Lawrence had spent days there on their trips. It was Mecca to anyone who loved art as they did. It was Philip's favorite, too. She walked around Florence for hours, and finally went back to the hotel and lay on her bed to rest. She laughed to herself in the room, thinking about how Winnie would have hated this trip and complained every minute of the way about the walking and the heat and Valerie's determination to see everything and leave no stone unturned in her travels. It would have been Winnie's worst nightmare and was Valerie's dream. She wondered if her mother had been more like her. She fell asleep early that night and woke up as the sun came up over Florence, which she could see from her room. She stood looking out the window at the city in the early morning light, which looked like a painting. She went for a walk and came back for breakfast at the hotel and arrived at the Uffizi just as it opened. She stayed there until it closed for lunch, walked some more, and then went back for the afternoon. And as she wandered through the streets afterward, she remembered Saverio's gallery and looked at the address on his card, which she still had in her bag. She had no idea where it was and stopped a policeman to ask. He told her in Italian, and indicated that it was very close, and she thought she understood and followed the direction that he had pointed, and when she turned a corner, it was there. It was a large, handsome gallery with a massive bronze sculpture in the window, and she was startled to see him through the glass, pointing emphatically at a painting and talking to a young woman. Feeling hesitant but curious, Valerie walked in, and Saverio turned to look at her and smiled in surprise.
"Signora Lawton, welcome in Firenze. Brava!"
He seemed delighted to see her, as though they were old friends, and introduced her to his daughter, Graziella, whom he had been speaking to. The young woman spoke excellent English, and the two women conversed for a few minutes. She looked about Philip's age, or a little younger. She went back to her office at the rear of the gallery a few minutes after they'd met, and Saverio continued to chat with Valerie in his easy, open way.
"When did you arrive?"
he asked her with a welcoming smile.
"I drove here yesterday," she said proudly, feeling accomplished,
and he complimented her again with another "Brava!"
"I've been at the Uffizi all day," she said, and he nodded.
"I grew up there."
He smiled at her.
"Was your family involved in art?"
she asked, wondering if he'd understand her. He did, but shook his head.
"No, my father was a doctor, and my mother a nurse. My father was very angry when I wanted to be an artist, but I have no talent, so I sell art by other people."
He laughed.
"He thought I was crazy, but I didn't want to be a doctor. He was very unhappy with me."
"Mine didn't want me to be an artist either."
Her real father had been an artist, she knew now, but that was too complicated to explain.
"You must show me your work," he said with interest.
"Oh, no,"
she said, feeling modest. She had recognized the important piece in his window, by a sculptor she admired. She wasn't in his league by any means, or didn't think so. And then Saverio turned to her.
"You will have dinner with us, yes?"
She hesitated and then nodded. She had nothing else to do, and he was friendly and interesting to talk to, and they shared a passion for art.
"What is your hotel?"
she told him, and he promised to pick her up at 8:30. And she left the gallery feeling brave and adventuresome again, as she walked back to her hotel. It was fun meeting new people. She had come to Europe for experiences just like this, after her trip to see her mother's home. Now she was free to play and relax, with the serious part of her travels over. She had no idea where they were going for dinner, and didn't know what to wear, so she wore a simple black skirt, a lacy white blouse, and high-heeled sandals, with her white hair loose down her back, and small diamond earrings Lawrence had given her for 20 years of marriage. And she carried a shawl in case it got chilly that night. She was waiting for him in the lobby when Saverio drove up in the red Ferrari. He looked very dashing in a well-cut blazer and white slacks, with a blue shirt, his deep tan, and his mane of white hair. He came inside and found her, and took her arm as they walked outside, and she got into the Ferrari with him and felt very racy as he tore through traffic and wove among the other cars. She laughed as she glanced at him. It was slightly terrifying driving with him, but very Italian, and she liked it.
"You make me feel young again,"
she said with a broad grin over the noise of the engine.
"You are young," he said, smiling at her. "At our age, we can do whatever we want, and we are as young as we wish to be."
And then he added,
"You look like your mother."
He watched her when they stopped at a traffic light.
"I wish that were true," she said ruefully, "but I don't. I look like my father."
She had just discovered that recently in Santa Barbara from the photographs Walter had of Tommy. But there was a similarity of expression with Marguerite that Saverio had noticed immediately.
"Then your father must have been a beautiful man."
She smiled at the compliment as they roared off again when the light turned green. Saverio was very charming and exciting to be with, and probably a bit of a ladies' man, but it suited him, and he was so Italian, and he made her feel attractive. They met his daughter at the restaurant, and her husband, Arno, and they were delightful. She ran her father's gallery in Florence, and her husband was French and worked for a local TV station as a producer. They said they had a little girl, Isabella, who was 2, and just talking about her, Saverio's eyes danced, and he showed Valerie a photo of her on his phone. She was wearing a tutu and had a halo of blonde curls and a mischievous smile.
"You have grandchildren?"
he asked her, and she shook her head.
"Philip isn't married."
She thought that explained it, but apparently not.
"Allora?"
Saverio said with a purely Italian gesture.
"My son Francesco is not married and has 2 beautiful children with a very nice girl."
Valerie smiled at what he said.
"My son hasn't done that yet,"
she said politely, and hoped he wouldn't. She was free-thinking and modern, but still had traditional values, although she knew she would have loved Philip's children, whatever he did.
"Children always surprise you," Saverio said, and they both laughed. His English improved with the wine they drank at dinner, and his daughter and son-in-law spoke very good English. They had a very enjoyable dinner, and then the young people left them, and Saverio took her to a bar and restaurant with a spectacular view of Florence and the night sky. He was not ready for the evening to end, and Valerie wasn't either. She was having such a good time.
"So, Valerie," he said, curious about her, "you are married, divorced?"
He was looking for another word, but didn't know it.
"A widow," she supplied. "My husband died 3.5 years ago."
She didn't sound pathetic, just matter of fact. She had made her peace with Lawrence's death. They had had many wonderful years together. He had lived a good life, and they had shared a great one.
"You are alone?"
He looked shocked, and she laughed.
"Yes. At my age, most women are, if their husbands die."
She was sensible about it. She didn't expect to find a man, or even want one. She was comfortable alone.
"Why? You are a beautiful woman, and very exciting. Why would you be alone?"
It was difficult to explain to him, and she didn't want to, and say most men were not beating a path to your door. She hadn't been out with anyone since Lawrence died. She'd had invitations from widowed men she knew, but didn't want them. She accepted her solitary state, and sometimes enjoyed it. And she and Lawrence had been good together. They had been so happy for so long. She didn't want to be greedy or foolish, and expect to find that again, and then be disappointed.
"You must be alone only if you want to be," he insisted. "Do you want to be alone?"
"Not really, but I keep busy. I do many things I enjoy."
"But you do them alone?"
She nodded.
"That's terrible. I am 70 years old, Valerie. I do not consider my life over as a man."
He was very definite, and seemed as though he meant it. She was surprised to hear his age. She had guessed him to be in his early or mid-60s. He was terrific-looking, and a very handsome man.
"It's different for men," she said simply. "Men have more choices. You can be with a 25-year-old girl if you want to. I'd look pretty silly if I did that. Men start new families with young women at your age," she said.
He shook a finger at her when she said it.
"No babies. I like women, not babies or young girls."
He was very clear about it, and Valerie realized with amazement that he was flirting with her. That hadn't happened to her in years, and she wasn't sure she wanted it to. But it was flattering, and it seemed to fit the scene. She was in Italy, and he was a charming, handsome, intelligent man. Maybe flirting with her wasn't such a bad thing. Winnie would have keeled over at the thought, but she couldn't imagine Saverio flirting with Winnie. The very thought of it made Valerie laugh.
"I do not believe in age," he said with determination. "It is a very small idea, like a small box. That box is too small for you. You have no limits. You are free."
He wasn't entirely wrong about her, and she liked what he said. He was saying that accepting a belief in age was too limiting, and apparently for him, too. It was certainly an appealing idea. They talked about it for a while longer, as best they could, and she was pleased to see that he had stopped drinking champagne since he was driving. But he encouraged her to have another glass, and she did. There was nothing she had to do in Florence, and could sleep in the next day.
"I want to show you Florence," he said as he signed the check.
She discovered as they left the bar that it was a club, and she wondered if he came here often, and if he dated a lot. He was everything people expected of Italian men, but he seemed sincere, and he confessed to her in the car about Marguerite.
"I am in love with your mother. I was la prima volta, the first time I saw her photograph. She is a woman of magic and mystery. The Count adored her."
She wasn't sure how he knew that, but she believed him. Their photographs, her mother's letters, and the extravagant gifts he'd given her suggested that.
"I wish I'd known her," Valerie said softly.
"You didn't?"
He looked shocked and sad for her as Valerie shook her head.
"I never met her. I didn't know she existed, as my mother, until recently. It's a long story.
Too long to tell now, and he didn't pry.
We will talk of it one day, he said, and sounded as though he meant that, too. We have much to talk about.
And then she thought of something, and decided she wanted the answer to a question before their friendship went any further, if it did.
Are you married, Saverio?
Why do you ask?
He turned to her with a curious expression.
I just wondered.
You think all Italian men run after all women?
He shook his head and looked disapproving.
No, I do not run after every woman. Only the special women, like you. And I am like you. My wife died when my children were small. She had the cancer. Graziella was 5 and Francesco was 10.
Like Valerie, he sounded matter-of-fact about it. It was a long time ago, longer for him, 30 years. And he said he had never remarried. He had never met another woman he wanted to marry. Valerie was sure he had had a lot of women in his life in the past 30 years, but she liked him. He was lively and fun, and she enjoyed him. And she could sense that there was depth to him, too. He drove her back to the hotel and kissed her chastely on the cheek, not the hand this time.
May we have lunch tomorrow?
He amused her. She wasn't swept off her feet by him like a young girl, and there was no question he was a flirt and he loved women, but he was a delightful man.
I'd love it, she said simply.
Will you come to the gallery?
I will, she said.
We will go to a restaurant with a very pretty garden,
he promised her, and she thanked him and waved as she got out of the car. He watched her go inside and then roared off in the Ferrari. It had been a wonderful evening for both of them. Chapter 24. The next day, Valerie turned up at the gallery at 12:30, and Saverio took her to the restaurant with the garden, which was as pretty as he said. They sat and talked for 3 hours, and she told him the story about her mother, and he was fascinated, particularly by how she had discovered her, through the safe deposit box and the photographs of her as a child, and Fiona's confession of what she knew when Valerie went to see her.
"That is destiny, Valerie," he said with certainty. "Those are not accidents."
And then he startled her with what he said next.
"Perhaps our meeting is destiny, too."
It seemed too soon to her to say that, although it was an appealing idea, and always a possibility. She didn't comment. He walked her back to the hotel then, and she spent a quiet evening reading and making a list of what she wanted to see in Florence. And the next day they went to the Uffizi together. He had 1,000 plans for what he wanted to do and show her. They drove through Tuscany on the weekend in the Ferrari with the top down. He took her to a dinner party given by his friends, many of whom spoke English. He introduced her to his son when he came to Florence. She met Isabella the Adorable. She was letting time drift by and enjoying it thoroughly. For 2 weeks she let life take its course, and then she wondered if she should move on and travel some more. She mentioned it to him one night at dinner. He took her to a different restaurant every day.
"Why do you want to leave Florence?"
he asked her in answer to her question, and she saw that he looked hurt.
"Are you unhappy?"
"No, I'm having a wonderful time, but I can't stay here forever. And you have things to do, Saverio. You're a busy man, and you're spending a lot of time with me. Don't you want to go back to your own life?"
"No, I love to be with you."
He spoke to her sometimes in Italian now, and she understood, if it didn't get too complicated.
"There is space for you in my life."
But she couldn't live in a hotel in Florence to be with him. Still, she loved having a man in her life again, talking to him, sharing ideas, doing things with him. She had never known any man like him. He made her feel like a woman again, whatever her age. And the fact that he was 4 years younger than she made no difference to either of them.
"Why don't we go to Rome for 2 days?"
he suggested, and they drove to Rome 2 days later. He stayed at his apartment, near where her mother had lived in E. Parioli, and she stayed at the hostler again. He didn't press her to stay with him. He already knew her better than that. And if anything were to happen with them, she needed time to believe it was real and he wasn't just playing. But he seemed to be very serious about her,
and his children had been very nice to her, too. His daughter, Graziella, had even said something about it to her at the gallery one afternoon when Saverio stepped out for a meeting and left her there for an hour to wait for him.
"You know, my father is more serious than he appears. He always seems like he's playing, and he loves women, the particularly pretty ones."
She smiled at Valerie.
"He's a man, and he's Italian, but he has been serious about very few women in his whole life, and he has been alone now for a long time. He was in love with a woman 10 years ago, and she died, like my mother. He has loved no woman since. I think he really likes you, and I promise you he is not playing with you."
Valerie was touched by what she said, and it was an insight into him that he hadn't given her himself. He had never mentioned the woman who died 10 years before. They had a wonderful time in Rome, and he showed her a side of the city she'd never seen before, the real Rome that Romans knew and loved. And when he walked her back to the hotel from a restaurant nearby on the second night, he kissed her on the Spanish steps, and she was surprised to realize that there was more tenderness to it than passion. It felt like a real kiss from a real man who had real feelings for her, and she felt something stir in herself that she thought had died years before. He kissed her again when he walked her back to her room, but she didn't invite him in. She couldn't yet. And she was beginning to worry about what they were going to do. She couldn't just stay in Italy to be with him. Sooner or later, she had to go back to New York. She tried explaining that to him, and he said the same thing he had said to her before.
"Why?"
"What do you mean, why? I have a life there, and a son."
"Your son is a man, Valerie, with a life of his own. One day he will marry or love a woman. You don't have a job. You're a painter. You're a free woman. We could live in Rome, Paris, Florence, New York. At our age, would you give this up to be in one city because you think you are too old to fall in love? That would be stupid and wrong. Perhaps destiny or your mother wanted us to be together. So you came to the Castello and we met. Perhaps destiny wanted me to buy the Castello to meet you, to return your mother's home to you."
The way he said it made it seem huge and a little overwhelming. She hadn't said anything about Saverio to Philip. After her 2 weeks in Florence, Philip had asked her if she'd visited him at his gallery yet. She didn't know what to say, and she didn't want to lie to him.
"Yes, actually, I did. We had dinner together, and I met his daughter and son-in-law. They're terrific. You'd love them. And I met his son in Rome."
"You did? How did you do that?"
Philip sounded a little surprised.
"I'm back in Rome for 2 days."
"Saverio seems like a terrific guy," he said innocently.
He didn't have the remotest idea that his mother was falling in love with him and hadn't left his side for 3 weeks. It was the farthest thing from Philip's mind, and not the way he envisioned his mother. She wasn't a romantic figure to him, just his mother.
"He's a lovely man," Valerie said, wondering if she should tell Philip what was going on.
But she didn't want to yet. She wanted to protect what they had, and things were heating up between them ever since he had kissed her for the first time in Rome. It was different when they went back to Florence, and after they'd been together for a month, he invited her away for the weekend. She kept thinking about what his daughter had said, that he was more serious than he looked. And not in a million years had Valerie expected something like this to happen to her. But she felt as though she could no longer turn back the tide, and maybe he was right, and it was meant to be. She was no longer sure what she believed. He took her to Portofino for the weekend, and they stayed at the Hotel Splendido. It was a charming port town, and they felt like honeymooners as they spent long mornings in bed and made love, walked around the little town, had late dinners, and came back to their room and made love again. It felt crazy and wonderful, and she'd never been so happy in her life. They were lying in bed late one night, and she looked at him in the moonlight.
"Saverio, what are we going to do? I have to go back. I can't just run away forever. I have to say something to my son."
"He's not your father. He's your son. You can do as you wish with your life."
"You wouldn't abandon your children. I can't do that to mine."
"I understand.
You came here for the summer. Give us that. Then we'll decide.
She nodded, and he made love to her again. And when he did, she almost forgot that she had a life in New York, and a world other than his. They went to Sardinia the following weekend, and stayed with friends of his in Porto Cervo, whom she enjoyed a lot. They had a beautiful boat, and they spent their days on it, and came back to the hotel at night. And Saverio took her to Venice on business with him. They flew to London for a day to see a painting he wanted to buy. They were slowly blending their lives and becoming a couple, and she felt totally at ease with him. Valerie enjoyed everything they did together. She wondered if her mother had felt that way with Umberto when she shared his life. And in August, they went to the house in Naples and spent a week there, and she could easily understand why her mother had loved it. And when they got back to Florence, Philip called and asked her when she was coming home.
"I don't know," she said honestly, not wanting to upset him. "I love it here."
"I can understand why. I love Italy, too. You don't need to rush back. Jane and I are going sailing in Maine for 2 weeks. I just wanted to check in."
When he said it, she felt like she'd gotten a reprieve and told Saverio about it that night.
"Would you come to New York with me and stay for a while?" she asked him.
He thought about it and nodded. He had been rethinking his life, too, and trying to figure out how to make it work for both of them. And she had a good point. He didn't want to abandon his children either. And he had galleries to run. Graziella and Francesco did a good job, but he was always close at hand, although he didn't work every day anymore. He did what he wanted, but he was still very much involved. Valerie was freer than he was, except for Philip, and she was concerned about Winnie, too. She had told Saverio about her.
"We need to find her a man," Saverio had said, and Valerie had laughed out loud.
In that respect, at least, Winnie was beyond hope. She didn't want a man. She just wanted to play bridge.
"I could spend time with you in New York," Saverio said thoughtfully. "Not all the time. I don't want to live there. But we could go back and forth. We are very fortunate. We can do whatever we want."
It was going to take some managing, but she realized he was right. She could paint anywhere, and he didn't have to be at his galleries all the time. Their children were grown, and he wasn't suggesting they become Siamese twins. They each had a life, and together they had even more. They talked about it a lot now, and by the end of August, they thought it could work. Even Valerie was convinced. Saverio had persuaded her that they could do whatever they wanted, and she found the idea immensely appealing. In the last week of August, she gave up her room at the hotel and moved in with him. It seemed foolish to keep the room. She hadn't slept there all month and preferred staying with him at his sunny little house. And she was going back to New York the following week when Philip returned from Maine after the Labor Day weekend. She was planning to stay in New York for the month, and Saverio was going to join her in 2 weeks and spend the last 2 weeks there with her. She was nervous about telling Philip about her romance with Saverio. She had left New York a single woman and was returning with a man as part of a couple. It was a totally unexpected change, and all she could hope was that Philip wouldn't be too shocked.
Chapter 25. When Philip and Jane left for Maine in mid-August, Valerie had been in Italy for almost 2 months. He missed seeing her, but he was happy she was having a good time, and he and Jane had been busy. She had taken the bar exam in July, and she wouldn't have the results until November, but she was hoping she had done well. And she was starting her new job in September. She had had 2 great offers from well-known law firms, Penny's, and another even more prestigious one, which had offered her more money and better terms, so she had accepted, and she could hardly wait to start. They had promised her a junior partnership in 2 years if she worked hard, brought in clients, and did well. And Philip was sure that she would do all 3. He had never been as taken with a woman in his life, and he had never gotten along as well with anyone as he did with Jane. They had been dating for 5 months, and were talking about moving in together in the fall. Everything was falling into place. And the day before they left for Maine, Christie's put the icing on the cake. They offered Philip a job in the art department, with a promotion and a raise effective October 1st. He would have to travel to Europe more, and there would be more perks. It was everything he had wanted and waited for nearly 3 years. He had accepted the job immediately. He and Jane were talking about it one afternoon, after they threw anchor for the night in a small cove. They'd had great sailing that day.
"It's so weird how things work out, isn't it?" Jane said, looking pensive. "I was so upset when I couldn't get the clerkship I wanted, and got stuck at the surrogate's court. But if I hadn't been there, I would never have been assigned to handle your grandmother's safe deposit box and met you."
She smiled at him as they lay in the sun on the deck, relaxing after their sail. "And if I hadn't gotten sidetracked into the jewelry department, someone else would have gotten that assignment to do the appraisal, and my mother would have never found out about her mother, and I wouldn't have met you." He leaned down and kissed her.
"It kind of makes you believe in fate, doesn't it?" she said thoughtfully.
"Or blind luck. But there was a little too much luck here for it to be just pure happenstance. It all fits together perfectly, and came out right in the end. And fortunately, you got rid of the boyfriend." She had heard from one of her law school friends, who knew John, that he had gone back to L.A. with Kara, and they were starting the business he'd mentioned, with her father's help. Jane was very glad she'd had the guts to leave him when she did, or she might never have gotten to know Philip and fallen in love with him.
"How's your mother doing, by the way?"
she asked casually.
"It feels like she's been gone forever."
It had given them more time together. Valerie didn't interfere, but she was a big presence in his life. Luckily, Jane liked her a lot, and Valerie led her own life.
"She's been away a long time," he agreed. "I think it's some kind of rite of passage for her, after finding out about her mother.
And after the auction, she would never have to worry about money again, not that she had. But she was secure now, and had a solid fortune behind her that would allow her to do whatever she wanted for the rest of her life. He was happy for her, particularly about the discoveries about her mother, and even finding her father's relatives, which had been a stroke of sheer luck. Yet another. "I think she's coming back right after Labor Day, but she says she wants to travel more now. She might as well while she can," he said, and Jane agreed. "After the auction, she can do whatever she wants. It'll be great for her. And for him one day, too. He was cognizant of that. I think she's gotten acquainted with the man who owns her mother's house now, the place in Naples. I met him in March when I was doing research on her. My mother said something about meeting his kids and seeing his gallery in Florence. I liked him a lot. I gave her his number. I'm glad she looked him up." They cooked dinner in the galley that night, and their 2 weeks in Maine were even better than they'd hoped. The weather was perfect. They ate lobster almost every night. They saw old friends of Philip's, and Jane liked them. Their two lives were blending smoothly, and they felt even closer to each other by the time they got back to New York at the end of the Labor Day weekend. And they both had new jobs to look forward to in the coming weeks. Philip was excited to see his mother when she got home and hear about her trip. She had been all over Italy for the past 2 months, and he knew from Penny that Winnie was desperate to see her too, and missed her. Valerie had called her regularly to check on her, and Winnie complained about how long she'd been gone. It was an odd feeling for Valerie when the plane touched down at JFK. She felt as though she had been away for years and had come back a different person. Her heart was with Saverio in Florence and Naples and Rome, but this was her home, and it felt incomplete now without him. She was glad he was coming in 2 weeks. There was a lot she wanted to share with him here, and she was ready to join him in his life in Italy, at least part of the time. And he was right. Why let their age limit them from what they wanted to do and could still enjoy? They could do anything they wanted. They had the money and the time, and they had been lucky enough to find each other. Or had been destined to find each other, as Saverio said. Whether destiny or blind luck, it was a precious gift, and Valerie was ready to embrace it, and Saverio was too. He had finally told her about the woman who died 10 years before. And he wasn't going to wait to lose the woman he loved for a third time. He wanted to enjoy every moment they could share for as long as they could, and hopefully for a very long time. Valerie called Philip when she got home that night. He and Jane had just gotten back, too. She was happy to know he was so close. They immediately agreed to have dinner together the next day, with Jane, of course, and he told her about their new jobs.
"Fantastic!"
She almost said, "Bravi,"
and stopped herself. Her Italian had improved a lot over the summer. How was Maine? She loved hearing the happiness in his voice. Jane was good for him, and Valerie was pleased that he was going back to the art department at Christie's. It was what he had wanted for more than 2 years.
Maine was perfect, Philip answered. We had a ball. I don't think I've ever eaten that much lobster in my life, and I can't wait to hear all about your trip, Mom. You were all over the map. Sardinia, Portofino, Naples, Rome, Florence, Venice, Siena.
She had sent Fiona and Winnie postcards from each place and emailed him a lot. The only thing she hadn't told him was who she was with on her travels, and she wanted to tell him right away. Now that they knew their plans, Philip deserved to know. They agreed to meet at 21 the following night for a homecoming celebration, and she was going to visit Winnie in the morning. She had wanted to call her when she got home, but knew she'd be asleep. She led an entirely different life from Valerie's late nights with Saverio now. Valerie's whole life had changed over the summer. She knew that Winnie would be unhappy about the traveling Valerie would do, but she'd just have to adjust. Valerie was not going to stay in New York full-time and give up Italy to take care of Winnie. And she was worried about Philip's reaction, too. There was no telling how he'd respond to her having a man in her life. Valerie unpacked what she'd brought home that night and walked around her apartment. The painting she'd started of Marguerite was still sitting on the easel in her studio, unfinished, and she wanted to finish it now. And her apartment looked cozy, but different. There was something missing now. It was a relic of her past life, with no evidence of her new one. She set a photograph of Saverio down next to her bed and felt better, as though to prove he really existed. He called her at 2 in the morning, when he woke up at 8 in Rome, and it was a relief to hear his voice.
"I miss you,"
was the first thing she said to him.
"Anch'io."
"So do I."
"How was the flight?"
he asked her, happy to hear her.
"Long, but I slept most of the way."
They had stayed up late talking the night before. There was so much to plan now and discuss.
"Have you seen Philip?"
He sounded as concerned as she was. There was no predicting how her son would react to him, although she said he had an important woman in his life now. But men were strange about their mothers, and possessive of them. He might take the news of their love affair very badly, although they both hoped that wouldn't be the case. Saverio's children were very pleased and liked her.
"I'm seeing him for dinner tomorrow night. I'll see Winnie in the morning."
Neither of them was worried about her, and Winnie's suspicion and disapproval were almost a given and to be expected. He was amused by Valerie's descriptions of her. She sounded like a cranky old lady, but he could tell that Valerie loved her and accepted her as she was.
"Call me after your dinner with Philip tomorrow night. I don't care what time,"
Saverio instructed her.
"It'll be too late for you. It'll be 4 or 5 in the morning. I'll call you when you get up."
"Go to sleep now," he said gently. "It's late for you. Call me when you wake."
It would be late afternoon for him. They were going to have to get used to the 2 time zones now. She loved their little inane conversations, and just having him be a part of her life, having him to share things with and do things with. She could hardly wait till he arrived in 2 weeks. It seemed like an eternity to both of them, and she had some hurdles to cross first. A big one. Her son. Saverio kissed her goodnight over the phone, and she lay in bed, thinking about him, before she fell asleep. It was hard to believe, but it was real. They had found love at their age. The next morning, Valerie called Winnie when she got up.
"So, you're finally back?" Winnie said in a querulous tone. "I was beginning to think you'd decided to stay there."
"I'm here," Valerie said simply. "Can I come by for a cup of tea?"
"I'm playing bridge at noon," she said, annoyed.
She needed to punish Valerie now for being away for so long. Valerie had expected it and wasn't surprised.
"I'll come now. I've been up for hours."
She had woken up on European time and called Saverio. He'd been on his way back to Florence from Rome, and he talked to her from the car. She had promised again to call him after dinner, and he wished her luck. It was the operative word now. Winnie looked well when she opened the door, a little thinner, but otherwise fine, and she grudgingly hugged Valerie and was visibly pleased to see her.
"You shouldn't have stayed away so long,"
she complained. In the end, she had gone to Martha's Vineyard and stayed with Penny and driven them all nuts. Penny had sent Valerie several emails about it that made her laugh, and Winnie had told her the children were badly behaved when Valerie called her there.
"I was having a good time," Valerie said honestly, and she'd been in no rush to come back. It was the blessing of having grown children. She didn't have to come home.
She followed Winnie out to the kitchen, and they made tea. The housekeeper was vacuuming Winnie's bedroom, so they were alone.
"I met a man," Valerie said as Winnie sipped her tea, and nearly choked.
"You what?"
Winnie stared at her.
"I met someone."
She felt sheepish and a little embarrassed. Winnie was silly, but daunting at times.
"Does he know how old you are?"
she said with a look of stern disapproval.
"Yes, he does. He's 4 years younger. We're both grown-ups."
"You're geriatric, for heaven's sake, acting like adolescents."
She had a way with words.
"Is he American?"
Valerie shook her head.
"Italian."
"Of course."
Winnie's lips were a thin line, even thinner than usual.
"He's after your money."
"Actually, he's not."
She wanted to say, "He's after my body," but didn't think Winnie could withstand the shock or the information.
"He's a very successful art dealer. He's coming here in 2 weeks. Would you like to meet him?"
"No, I would not."
She was outraged, but at least Valerie had offered.
"I'm not meeting some Italian gigolo."
She had completely ignored what Valerie had said about what he did for a living.
"So that's what you've been up to all this time. How pathetic. You're lucky he didn't kill you in your sleep."
It was an awful image, but was how she thought, and it was almost laughable that she'd suggested about one of the most important art dealers in Florence and Rome. They sat in silence in her kitchen for a while as she digested what Valerie had said.
"Couldn't you be happy for me, Wynne? It's nice to have someone to share my life with. He's a nice man. He owns the chateau where my mother lived. That's how Philip met him, and I looked him up."
"You could have met someone here if you were so desperate."
"I wasn't. It came as a total surprise. Blind luck. Or destiny, as he says."
"I still think he's after your money. He probably read about the auction and was lying in wait."
"I wish you didn't think that way."
But she always had. Her parents had been that way, too, shut down about everything, and angry at the world. Valerie knew Winnie would come around eventually. She always did, grudgingly. She'd adjust. It just wasn't pleasant while she worked her way through it. Valerie left a little while later and told Winnie she'd call her in a few days. Winnie didn't answer as Valerie closed the door and left. Valerie got to 21 that night before Philip and Jane. She was nervous, waiting for them, and tried to appear calm when they arrived. But Philip knew her better and saw instantly that something was happening. She looked great, happy and relaxed. Her eyes were bright, her hair was beautiful, and she had a deep tan. And she was wearing a new dress she'd bought in Rome. Actually, Saverio had bought it for her, and it was shorter than she usually wore, but it was great on her. She looked stylish and full of life as she chatted about her trip, and Philip waited for the other shoe to drop all through dinner. He knew her too well, and her surprises weren't always good news. He hoped this wasn't a bad one.
"Okay, Mom, what's up?"
He finally broke the ice. He couldn't stand it anymore, as they ate dessert. The dinner had been delicious, but she had only picked at hers, another telltale sign. She wasn't a big eater, but she ate nothing at all when she was nervous. She thought about Winnie as she gazed at Philip and hoped he'd take the news better than she had. But fortunately, Philip was more like her, open-minded and positive, most of the time at least. But she still couldn't guess how he'd feel about his mother having a romance, since it had never happened before.
"I met someone in Italy," she said cautiously.
There was no other way to say it, and he stared into her eyes, not sure he had heard her right.
"A man?"
He looked blank, as though he didn't understand, and Jane held her breath. She had gotten it on the first try, and didn't know how he'd react either. Sometimes even adults had crazy ideas about their parents, particularly men about their mothers.
"Obviously, not a woman, for heaven's sake."
Valerie smiled nervously and decided to dive in fast.
"A very nice man. We've been together all summer, and we like each other a lot. To be honest, I love him.
Full disclosure. Philip looked as if he'd been shot, as Jane winced. This was a biggie. She wondered if Philip was going to feel she was being disloyal to his father.
You do? Who is he? What is he? How did you meet him?
The questions flooded his mind all at once.
It's Saverio Salvatore. I met him at the Castello when I went to see it. And then I saw him in Florence, and it kind of took off after that. Very unexpectedly, I might add. And I know we seem ancient to you, but it just kind of happened. We're going to enjoy it for now, and figure out a way for it to work between Italy and here. He'll come to New York, I'll go there. We both have children and work and lives of our own, but we want to spend time together, too.
Philip didn't look angry, just surprised.
I never thought of that as a possibility. I don't know why. You're certainly young enough to have a man in your life.
She hadn't expected him to say that, and tears filled her eyes.
Do you think you'd move to Italy full-time?
He looked worried about it. Even if they were both busy, he liked knowing she was nearby and seeing her when he could.
I don't think so.
She answered him thoughtfully.
I have a life here, and you. But it will be fun spending time in Italy, too. We're planning to go back and forth a lot. It'll keep things interesting. So, what do you think?
I think I'm a little stunned, he said honestly, with a cautious smile.
She had always said that his father was the only man she'd ever love, and he was sure she'd believed it when she said it. She had never expected to love someone else, so it was a whole new concept for all of them. But he liked what he saw in her eyes. He saw happiness and peace.
I'm happy for you, Mom, Philip said generously. He seems like a good guy, and if you two have the energy to run back and forth between Italy and the States, what the hell? Why not? Why would you sit around like Winnie, bitching and playing bridge?
That had never been his mother's style, and never would be, he knew. He smiled broadly at her then.
You look great. He must make you happy. You deserve it.
He does, she confirmed. And so do you.
It was a coming of age for both of them. She and Philip were both adults. Being able to accept a new man in her life could have been hard for him, and he was choosing not to let it, and to be gracious about it. He was a man, not a boy. Valerie was proud of him, and happy about how he had taken the news, and so was Jane. She was smiling at Valerie, too, pleased for her, and relieved that Philip hadn't made an issue of it, and respected his mother's right to do as she wished. And she thought it courageous of Valerie to embark on a new life and relationship at her age. It would be challenging going back and forth to Italy, or maybe just plain exciting. Jane loved that Valerie was willing to try something new. She modeled openness and courage and love of life to her son, which was a great gift to him. And then Philip grinned mischievously.
Did you tell Winnie yet?
I did,
Valerie smiled, thinking of their exchange that morning.
What did she say? I bet she had a fit.
Philip chuckled.
She did. She told me I was geriatric.
Philip burst out laughing at that.
You can count on her every time. She'll get over it.
Valerie didn't look worried.
I know she will. She just doesn't know it yet.
They laughed about it, and he gave his mother a big hug when they got up.
You should have told me at the beginning of dinner, then you could have eaten your steak.
It's okay, she laughed. I'll eat a sandwich when I go home.
She wasn't hungry, just relieved. He had taken the news like a loving son. They hugged again before they parted outside the restaurant and left in two separate cabs. He and Jane were going to his apartment that night, not Jane's, so they didn't drop Valerie off downtown. And Jane told him in the cab how impressed she was by his reaction to his mother's romance.
I've had friends go nuts when their widowed or divorced parents fall in love with someone else. I think most people don't really expect their parents to have lives and relationships of their own, and some people can be real jerks about it.
It was testimony to Philip and Valerie's relationship that her announcement to him had gone over well.
It surprised the hell out of me at first, he admitted sheepishly. I just never expected her to fall for someone else after my dad. But why not? She does deserve it. We have each other.
He looked lovingly at Jane.
Why should she be alone for the rest of her life? Why shouldn't she have someone, too? And if it works, it'll be great. I guess we'll be going to Italy in the future, he said as he kissed her. And he liked the idea, particularly Florence, which was one of his favorite cities.
I don't care where we are, just so I'm with you, Jane said, and kissed him.
It was almost verbatim what Valerie had said to Saverio before she left. Valerie waited patiently until 2 a.m. to call Saverio again. She got him just as he woke up at 8 a.m. in Florence, and he was wide awake the minute he heard her voice.
How was it? What did he say?
He asked immediately, concerned. He knew that if Philip objected vehemently, it would dampen Valerie's enthusiasm for their plans. She didn't want to upset or hurt her son.
He was terrific, she said happily. He looked shocked for about 4 seconds, and then he said he was happy for us, and I deserve it, and I can tell he means it.
She sounded elated and relieved, and Saverio lay in bed and smiled. It was the only thing he had been truly worried about. The rest they could figure out with a little jet lag and a lot of air tickets. He'd been thinking of buying a plane for business, and that would make things easier too. But even without one, he was certain the relationship would work. They were both old enough to realize how lucky they were to have found each other, to treat each other well, and to know what they wanted and needed and were able to give each other.
I'm so happy, he said, beaming at his end.
Philip was the only obstacle he had feared, and could have made life miserable for his mother if he wanted to, and been nasty about it, possibly in defense of his father's memory. Instead, they had the approval of all their children, which meant a lot to both of them, and made everything easier.
Now, hurry up and come over, she said, and sounded like a woman in love.
I will be there in 2 weeks, he reminded her,
and they chatted for an hour after that, both of them forgetting how late it was for her. It just felt good to be alive and in love.
Chapter 26 When Saverio's flight arrived from Rome 2 weeks later, Valerie was waiting for him at the airport, and he took her in his arms as soon as he emerged from customs. He kissed her, and they smiled at each other. It made others smile as they saw them and walked by. They were so obviously in love and happy to see each other. Saverio was wearing a well-cut dark blue suit and looked very distinguished, and she was wearing a chic black cotton dress in the heat of the New York Indian summer. They walked out of the airport with their arms around each other's waists. They were in no hurry, just happy to be together. The 2 weeks apart had felt like months to them.
I bought a plane yesterday,
he told her, and she laughed and told him he was crazy. But she knew that he had bought it for business, for him and his children to use on their trips for the gallery, to see important clients and buy new paintings all over Europe. They were having dinner with Philip and Jane that night, at La Grenouille, to welcome Saverio to New York. They were going to have drinks at her apartment first, and then go uptown for dinner. They had a lot to celebrate. Philip and Jane's new jobs, her relationship with Saverio, and whatever else they could think of. And when he saw it, Saverio loved her apartment and the atmosphere she had created. It was small, but like a warm embrace. It was a piece of her history, and she didn't want to give it up. And he was interested in all of it, and admired her art and her eclectic collection of objects. He had 2 houses and an apartment in Italy. They would have her place in New York, and best of all, they had each other. They had all they needed. Their life together was a gift. Their meeting each other at all had been a blessing. They had come together through a series of what seemed like miracles now, which included not only them, but everyone on their path, each in some special way that met their needs. The miracles could be explained as destiny, blind luck, or coincidence, but magic had occurred. A woman who had vanished from their lives and virtually disappeared had touched them all in miraculous ways and brought them together. Marguerite had worked magic in their lives in the end, and blessed each of them with immeasurable gifts.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Property of a Noble Woman by Danielle Steele, performed by Dan John Miller, directed by Mel Foster, engineered by Ezra Baker. Performance copyright 2015 by Brilliance Audio, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.